talk to the. Well, if you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about
pop culture
that they like, the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Get yourself addicted.
Welcome into the Pop Culture Pile Driver. Get addicted to the content. I am Jason Rossi, one half of this here podcast. You can follow along all social media platforms at Jason D. Rossi. And you can follow our show just over on the Twitter machine at Pop Culture PD. And when you do, it will instantly make you more bloom. With me as always, my tag team partner in the podcast sphere. He can be followed along at Billy Yee 2411 on Twitter, but there's gotta be a movement for the Bully D. There's got to be.
Oh yeah, you know what? It's true.
That's good. I will say one thing, and I hope there's no like true offense taken, because sometimes jokes can go too far and people, you never know the hyphenated ways we feel about things, but the Bully D moniker is hilarious to me. And I don't mean like offensively either. Like you're not like, you're more like, I would say like the prototypical 2020s version of a Twitter user, right? Like, hey, I see something, I'm just going to poke at it.
Yeah. I mean, if you get what I think is a shit take out there, I'm going to let you know about it.
Well, what about your own takes?
I mean, they could be crap too, but I mean, I believe in my takes.
Oh, now you sound like me. And see, this is now how the cookie crumbles. But hilarious follow on Twitter at Billy Yee 2411, over on all other social media plads at Billy D 2411. He recently had his OnlyFans shut down for 2.5 months due to some foreign exchange. There were some weird foreign currency things going on. Bill, we can talk about it off the air. But he is my guy here. He's Billy D. What's going on, dude?
Not too much. Broadcasting early, not to date the podcast, but 7:30, I mean, whatever works.
Early. It's early, dude. It is. Like, you know what? My life is such a conundrum that, like, I don't know. Every time we say in the morning, I'm like, I get excited about it. Because I'm like, okay, good way to start the day. Kind of gets my juices flowing. Everything's up and going. But then it's like 7, whatever. It's like 6:50. And I go, oh, Christmas. I got to, you know, like get this together. It's just moving parts. It's moving parts. But happy to be here with you. Happy to be here with you listening. And appreciate you if you can find this. If you found this podcast randomly, let's say, if you're one of the few, which randomly get DMs about. But, hey, that's cool. That's what the World Wide Web is all about. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also review the podcast. We'd love a review. It's been a hot minute since a review. So if you can leave a 5-star review, hell, a 4-star review, just a review. You can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, all those other ones. Our India listeners, I don't know if iTunes India can leave a review.
Why not?
I don't know. But Ghana is the name of the podcast channel that they listen on. So I don't know if they have, like, you know, different iTunes in different countries. By the way, if you re-sign up for your, like, just the one on your computer, you can change the country.
Can you really?
The IP address will eventually self-correct. Hmm. But, like, so say, like, there's music that's just released to the UK, which a lot of the stuff, that's, like, one of the countries you'll kind of want to be. So, like, for, like, 5 hours, you can actually download some UK exclusives that you can't get in the United States.
That's odd. We could do enough.
But then the IP address will self-correct and then you get screwed. And probably they'll probably take the music away from you. But anyways, I saw that on Reddit. You can also follow us on the YouTube, Bill. Subscribe over there. Search Pop Culture Pile Driver. We're part of the Facebook group, the Dork Shared Gooniverse, along with Dork. The Dork Podcast, Change My Mind, Mac and Goo, some of the streamers be over there, as well as TLDR and the Pineapple Boys. You guys push your stuff over there too?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So even you can get the Pineapple Boys, if you're into psych, or if you're not, it's a good way to just a companion piece instead of reading, you know, TV Guide from 10 years ago, listen to Billy and Doc talk about it. Check out our merch over at T Public. You can search Pop Culture Pile Driver. Also, that's a chunky. If you're a fan of, I Think You Should Leave. And if you're not, become one. Music from, Oh Yeah. You said they're currently figuring out how to tour as that entity. Is that what the deal was?
Yeah, they need, you know, a drummer and probably a bassist to actually be able to play, you know, like much like, you know, we talked about the Foo Fighters last week.
Yeah.
To figure all that stuff out.
That's going to be very interesting. Again, last week we did our top 11 Foo Fighter songs and they canceled the rest of their tour, including a Boston Day for Boston Calling, being replaced by Nine Inch Nails, which
I've never seen live. Have you?
Yes, twice. So I will say this. I'm not particular. Like, I became a fan of a lot of these like alternative and like rock bands later. Like, I wasn't like, I was, we obviously knew of them. I was mimicking the end of the Closer video when he hovers over the piano like a vampire, like with friends holding legs up like a keg stand, but it was touching keyboards. But like, when I saw them once at a festival, and then I saw them once offhand, like at their own concert, I think at Gannis. It's like a laser rock show.
Really?
Yeah. So it is definitely something worth seeing. And you know, probably 10 songs that you don't recognize that you know. Hmm. So, but like, if compared to Foo Fighters, I think it's apples and oranges, in my opinion, because Foo Fighters are like kind of like classic, like rock band that you like hits and hits and hits and like stage presence. But Trent Reznor knows how to put on a show. So I think if you are one of the people that are, we're going to see Foo Fighters, still have those tickets, I think you're in for a show. And I think if you have the opportunity, Bill, to see them, see them.
Yeah, because Mac said he was a little of the Mac and Goo program, a little hesitant because of Nine Inch Nails being the replacement.
Mm.
I like a lot of their songs, and I've always heard he's up there with, like, you know, Jack White. He's like running around stage doing a bunch of different shit because he doesn't have a ton of people up there with him usually, right?
No, it's a pretty big band. Like, he put on, yeah, because they have like the full, they have like two or three drum sets. One show, the festival show I saw, three drum sets. So it's wild. Like, and I'm telling you, it's like all laser and stuff. Like, I'm a huge Muse fan. So some people might not like, I don't know what your flavor of Muse is.
I like Muse.
Okay. But I guarantee if I brought you to the show with me, it would blow your mind because they're another one of those bands that put on like almost like a rock opera esque, like super, super, you know, like show. They're good. And that's what Nine Inch Nails is kind of like. So, you know, for an hour and a half or 2 hours, you can get down. But Bill, today, not just talking replacements again, Bo, one last note, but the Foo Fighters. So like, yeah, there is like the only people that they've spoken to, like their agents and labels, is like, they're really much in a complete state of like, we don't know. Like, sometimes when these deaths happen, it's like, hey, give us like 6 months. Like, they're really like, I don't know what we're going to do. Like, that's hard. I'm sure they'll come back. I'm sure like these things have happened through years. Look at a lot of famous bands, but it's just hard when, you know, especially these sad, tragic losses. And nothing sad or tragic than our segue here, Bill, to Nirvana.
When was the anniversary?
April 8th, 1994 was the day that Kurt Cobain took his life. So April 8th, just a week past.
Yeah, and I'm very glad that we did this because I forgot how many awesome songs they have and how unbelievably like meaningful almost every one of them is.
The best way for me to describe my fandom of Nirvana, again, a little bit later. So like my 90s, I feel like we probably have a similarity in this. Like my like first 10 years of life were mostly driven by like classic rock from my dad, R&B 70s music from my mom, and then all pop into hip hop, into that like early like Puff Daddy genre of music. That was a couple. So like my first 12
from your sisters.
From my sisters. Like that was literally it. I didn't really discover music of my own until probably around 1999, 2000. But this is like the TRL days, like I was so infatuated. Like that's when I started learning about the Korns, the Limp Bizkits, but I would not consider those like bands I really relate to. I just like the music. But it's funny, and of course Nirvana was there, right? Like Nirvana, Alanis Morissette, but I always just thought Nirvana was moody. And like, I was like, I don't really like this. And then one day, it was probably 2000, it was some point in like sophomore year high school, I started, like, they had only three CDs. So I was like, screw it. I can bang out these. And, like, you look in the back of the CDs, hit, or recognized song. And I remember sitting there and, like, listening and diving deep and being like, holy cow.
Yeah, I actually was into them a little bit earlier. I remember, like, my clothes changed around the time they came out because I dressed like Nirvana. I wore big baggy clothes and stupid flannel shirts that now I guess Fryer has found all of them because that's all he ever wears. But I never I liked them as like hearing them. I never like got into like the lyrics of it till much later on. And all of the songs, I mean, I went through all our lists and even beforehand, like digging deep into the meanings of the songs. Like this guy was a genius. And like the way he put pen to paper on a lot of this stuff. I mean, you know, you like once you dig into everybody's lyrics, I'm sure you find stuff more and more, but his stuff is some of the stuff he wrote right before he died is like scary.
Oh yeah. Well, he, like, first and foremost, like, one thing that I is said about his suicide, like, one of his friends was like, I knew Kurt was depressed, but I never thought he was suicidal. PSA, and we're not going to go on soapbox. If you have a friend that's down, you have a friend or you know somebody, the simplest wave of emoji text, a thumb up emoji, just some sort of recognition to your friends, it probably will go a lot longer than you know what's happened. For me, Bill, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm sure through time, like, just some sort of odd reach out just makes your day and can change your outlook on a million things. So just keep that in mind. We all never know. We all play a kind of a character to each other sometimes. But when I read that, reading like the whole, there's like a whole website.
Like, Come As You Are. I think he wrote like a little while before he died. And it says like, I don't have a gun. Well, he did.
There's so many things. And then there's also in podcasts we've talked about more on the wrestling side, but like conspiracy theories around this death as well. You can dig into that if you want, but just remember, like, reach out to people, be a friend. It takes literally zero effort to say hello and to be kind. It really does. Like, it takes more effort to be a dink, truly. And trust me, I know, because I'm on both sides on the daily. But yeah, he passed again April 8th, 1994. And just to think, their first album, Bleach, was technically released in 89, but that didn't have like, that got like popular later. Mm. They're two, Nevermind and In Utero, the two major albums, both released, like, everything happened such a cramped time. So we're going to get into the top 11 in a moment, but I wanted your take on this. Because I have mine. Do you believe, you said Kurt Cobain's a genius, and that Nirvana, I think, has the allure of like one of the biggest bands of all time or most impactful bands of all time. Do you believe, I don't want to get dark with it, but let's just say they were able to release six more albums. Do you think that would have faded in time? And do you think that, like, Ernst, because you have to think he was a certain age and had a certain mindset for only a certain amount of time. And this goes on with a lot of rock bands. Do you think that would have kind of dissipated over, like, let's say they lasted throughout the 90s and put out one album in the 2000s, then they weren't a band anymore?
Yeah, you die early, you become a legend, right?
Or at least kind of quit the bands, like the Beatles. Beatles have, I think it's 8 studio albums, but it's all in this like 5-year time frame. Yeah. So they were all basically like 18 to like 25. And like,
you don't have a lot of Foo Fighters, right? That stay around forever and still make good music for consecutive decades. This was definitely a band that burned bright. Like, it's a, you know, Austin-like run in wrestling, but I think he would have been able to at least evolve and change and, you know, grow with the time, because, you know, you dig into some of his songwriting, it's pretty damn good. So yeah, they're made famous because he died in the way that he did, and he lived such a like a crazy life. He was married to a woman who became famous too and was famous. So yeah, the death definitely helped solidify their aura, if you will.
Yeah, like, I hate to say it that way, but I just truly believe that. Like, look at a lot of these, like the whole 27 Club. Like,
but those did, people... yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, they did rule the world at one point. They were the biggest thing.
And they have that's
the most iconic album cover and, like, one of the greatest albums of all time. And I think they were kind of dubbed that at the time.
I agree with you. I'm on board. I just think, like, if that, I just truly in my heart of hearts and my thought is that if this band lasts another 6 years, there's still those early albums are still those early albums, but they become the Sound Gardens of the world. But RIP Chris Cornell. They become the, like, I love Stone Temple Pilots, but like they kind of, they, there's ebbs and flows, and I can say what it did. I do. That's just my, because like, things change. Think about like when the boy band era and the Limp Bizkits, the Korns. Imagine like a Nirvana album during that time. Like, I just, and also Kurt, as you know, as we'll get into, loved pop music. Yeah, so like, I he may have modified his sound too. You never know.
Yeah, it's true. But Unplugged, at least in my memory, it's tough now. Maybe it's getting clouded because it's been so long. I remember that being huge when he was alive. And I know it was.
Yes, it was. Because you remember, Unplugged too, like, this is 1993. There was, what, a handful of cable channels at the time? Like, maybe like 15 to 30. So, like, your cable channels weren't, like, crazy. I remember being a kid in the, you know, you go to the TV Guide channel. There was, what, like 90 networks maybe, and most of them are kind of filler crap. Like, you had MTV, you had VH1, and that Unplugged stuff was huge. Because that was, like, I remember Springsteen did one at the time. Like, it was, like, appointment viewing. And radio play took, as soon as they released it as an album or CD, radio took those. So
yeah, the first one was Squeeze.
Oh my God, are you serious? I love Squeeze.
10,000 Maniacs. I kind of remember the 10,000 Maniacs one.
Because the song Weather was another famous unplugged, but I'm searching that Squeeze later. Thank you for telling me that. All right, they used to come in the Pavilion in Boston every year, but all right, let's get into this one, Bill. We did our top 11. We both put our list of 15 out. We did a little math and goo, and here is where we go. Coming in at number 11 is the sixth track off of In Utero. It is a song that we could describe this podcast, Bill, at times. It is dumb.
Yeah, I think I'm just happy, right?
Yeah, and I took a couple excerpts that really, I think, grabbed this. Like, this song, first of all, maybe the most melodic and kind of like low tone for them. Like they're never really rocks, this song, right? There is some nice drum and kick in the
it's a
chorus.
Slow pop song.
Perfect way to put it. Cobain said the song was just about people who are easily amused. This actually is a good idea.
Basically.
Yeah. He says people who aren't capable of progressing their intelligence, but are also totally happy watching 10 hours of television and really enjoying it. He said, I've met a lot of dumb people. They may have a shitty job. They may be totally lonely. They don't have a girlfriend. I guess it's all dudes or lesbians. They don't have much of a social life, but yet for some reason they're happy.
Man, that's me.
No, absolutely not, Bill. Absolutely not. Kurt Cobain's daughter, I actually remember this covering or writing an article about this back in the day. She said, I cry every time I hear the song. It's a stripped down version of Kurt's perception of himself. Of himself on drugs, off drugs, feeling inadequate, and to be titled the voice of a generation.
That's her interpretation, though, right?
Yeah, because she, like, obviously this is his daughter. You know, there's some, you know, all sorts of mind matter there. But when I read this, I think it was 2 days ago when I saw that. And then I listened to the song again, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, ooh, if that's the way, like, you can interpret any song any way you want, right? Yeah. But that one, that got me. I don't know why, and especially from her daughter's perspective. And she had no relationship with her father because he was dead when she was like two. Oh, just sad. But a great, good tune nonetheless. And again, like you said, there's no bad songs on this list. If anything, it's arguable that this could be a top 50 if you wanted. And there's only like 75 or 100 songs.
Yeah. No, I mean, every song is. And, like, they're another band that I thought was, like, yeah, you know, more of their stuff sounds the same than not. Maybe two songs kind of sound exactly the same. But other than that, yeah, they're very varied in the way they approach a song.
Yeah, and that's another big part of Kurt's thing. And, you know, let's be honest. We just talked about earlier. We talked about here. Highly depressed individual. Someone who did not want to be what he became. And I think that probably led to, unfortunately, a lot of what his depression was. Like, he didn't want to be the voice of a generation. He didn't want to be a part of a movement. He just wanted to be a dude who made music that made people feel the way he felt. And he didn't realize that, you know, and this is kind of the sad irony of it all. Like, there's millions and millions, probably a billion people in the early 90s who felt exactly like he did, that didn't have music like he was producing and making to relate to. And once that all like played in his head, I think it just became too much. Coming in at number 10, Bill, the 11th track off of Nevermind, I'm on a Plane, PLAIN, which I will be honest with you, Bill, did not know that's how it was spelled till about 5 years ago.
Really?
I always thought he was singing about being on an actual airplane.
No, I think he's like a level plane.
Yep.
And like, it did make sense, but like, I saw it a while ago, like how it was spelled. And like, growing up, I thought it was like, I'm on a plane. I can't complain.
But like, I used to listen to this on airplanes. It's one of my like go-to tracks when like post takeoff.
Yeah. But like, I think it is like he's at a high point in his life. Like, that's what he's writing about. And it's like a song about, you know, writing and writer's block. So it's not one of the more intricate Nirvana songs, but still good.
Yeah. He explained it as classic alienation, even though he said there's a couple really strong books that, now that I'm a book reader, Bill, I don't know if I spoiler, I read books now. So self-help. So I'm like Tony Robbins, but, I'll tell you how to fix your life.
I don't like that.
No, Bill, you gotta read those books. Makes you open up that mind. No, I'm not really Tony Robbins. I'm not reading Tony Robbins, but other books. Anyways, there's a lot of great, like, there's a Come As You Are, one that was written, I think, in like the late 90s, but he basically said that every time Kurt, there's one of the writers, says every time Kurt was asked about the song, he gave them a different meaning. So at the end of the day, he's one thing that he kind of put together. If you take the lyrics and you just read them, it's pieces of poetry just thrown together. So it's actually almost like he just had a bunch of different lines written and he's kind of mashed them together. Yeah. Listen to it again, aside from the chorus. Yeah, the chorus is kind of like, I'm on a plane. Which, by the way, that might be the signature Nirvana like sound. You know, we talked about this.
Like DMX with what?
Yeah. Come on. Like kind of like moany, groany, grunge. Like that's his segue in music. And it's brilliant.
No, that's a good point, though, because when I was listening to this in the car yesterday, I was like, I guess a part of it sounds like that. But then like every little part is kind of like about something different almost.
Yeah, like lyrically, like look at the, it's just smashed lines into each other. But Nirvana and most good, I just feel like rock and like rap, like you can kind of make poetry, like lines make sense if the way you perform. Number nine, Bill, maybe the most controversial song in the history of Nirvana is, I guess you could call them like radio play songs, Rape Me.
It's an odd one. And I believe this one is about a guy raping a girl and then the guy going to prison and getting raped repeatedly.
Yeah, you could. You know what's funny? This song in Date Rape, I know it's like similar, but like Date Rape is from, unfortunately, the raper's perspective. And I hate to use this word. I feel like we're saying bad words, but just I don't every day say these.
Yeah, no.
This song is like the anti-rape song where he's basically, it's like a defiant song and basically saying like, go ahead. The lyrical content, someone pulled it apart. It's like kind of like, go ahead, Bill. Like, you know, do what you need to do. But one day I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
It's almost then, like you're never going to win.
Yeah. And then like there's the, you know, some people said it was about like the media and like what they were doing to him and how they were portraying, like not portraying him, but like what they were doing. Like you were saying, like he never wanted this.
Nope. And that was another. So there was two like unconfirmed. So for years, and she said this to an audience at times, I was at the song, I was told that it was interpreted as record labels. Like record labels were forcing him because Nevermind was a massive freaking album. And then they already had basically all of In Utero written. And they were like, all right, we need more Smells Like Teen Spirits. We need more.
Well, this is basically the riff of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
And this is why people kind of put those two and two together. Like, is he kind of like doing it, and then the lyrical content. And the fact that this song got radio play in the 90s is one thing. So
it could never today because you can't draw this, like rightfully so. You can't, like it's become more of a top button topic, rightfully so.
Oh, so, absolutely. And I don't think it gets mass radio play at all anymore. I don't think rock station.
I haven't heard in years. Well,
the station I worked for went from adult contemporary to a rock station in 2008. And I remember being at a Shaw's because I used to do like promos. Being at a Shaw's set up right in front of the produce section on a Saturday afternoon and this song playing in there. And I'm just like, this is hilarious. And some old lady came up to me. She didn't hear the song, but it was just, there was such a weird thing in my head. Like you just say like, right, man, right, man, right, man, right. And she's like, oh, excuse me, what, can I get a bumper sticker? I'm like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. Like, just go for it. Another thing, the performance of Cobain in this one, his voice, is amazing. Like just all scratch. This man must have had lozenges on the by the dozens. Cause I mean, his voice is strained throughout the song.
It's not often I get to the end of this song anymore because I hear this and I'm like, I'd just rather hear Teen Spirit, but it's still a great song.
But yeah, just especially the end. Just, it's like, oh Jesus, this guy. Again, great performed In Utero, fourth track on that. Coming in at number eight, the debate of our text last night, Lithium. Not only the fifth track off of Nevermind, not only a jam, but also the name of a Sirius XM 90s grunge alternative radio station.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, Lithium, Channel 30, one of my go-tos on Sirius. You're not a Sirius guy, are you?
No. Well, never, but also I don't listen to the, what is it, audio platform?
There you go. Yeah, Sirius XM Pandora. We'll see who I'll say Swallow soon. But yeah, Lithium is, again, one of those songs that that Kurt Cobain said. He said he actually – this is one of the few songs he said he actually did finish writing instead of taking pieces of his own poetry and things written down. So, like, what that means, he actually wrote a song.
This which is I guess crazy. Is like the – it's basically the way I interpret it is, you know, light my candles in a daze because I found God. Yeah. It's like, I think it's somebody who finds like religion, and it's not that great. Sunday morning is every day for all I care. Like, to me, it's like one of those things. It's just like bashing religion a little bit, I would guess.
That's a good, great take on it. I think, yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, he clearly had direction when he wrote this. Mm-hmm. So that's, I guess, was oddly a rarity for Kurt Cobain, based on all the people who did like biographies and the things that he said. So I think your interpretation is good as any, especially, yeah, the religious connotation. And again, this could also kind of be in that mix of like where he was positioned, right? People started talking about them as this like almost religious movement as a band, and people like following them and like changing the way they dressed and looked, kind of religious-esque. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'll say also, when this, they went into the Hall of Fame in 2014, this is one of my favorite covers. So like bands, other bands performed their songs. St. Vincent, who not a very overly popular, like in like alt scene she was, but she performs this amazing. I think this song sounds so good with a female vocalist. One of the, maybe the only Nirvana songs I can truly say, and maybe it's her voice as well, but I truly, recommend checking that out. So St. Vincent performing Lithium at the 2014 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Coming in at number... Oh, first of all, that song, all these other songs kind of were all the place. This is one of the highest charters for them. The Hot 100, not alt, not rock charts, number 64, Lithium.
Really?
Number 64, which today you don't even see like any... Like Imagine Dragons, but I mean like true like rock bands aren't on there. Number 7, one of the biggest songs the band ever released, the first single in the third track of In Utero, that is Heart Shaped Box.
Yeah, this one I almost forgot to rank. Like, I was like, you know, going through the music and I completely forgot. It's not a song about my calves, although they are shaped like a heart. But
wait, individually or if you put them together?
No, individually.
Nice. Good job, Bill.
I work my calves.
Yeah, I got that.
Every time I mention them, I talk about how I was a roofer, but this song is like, it has that like slow, like little guitar to start. And then it gets into that, like, I wish I could eat your cancer when you turn black. Hey, like this is, I didn't look up the meanings for this one. I don't know if you did, but this is just a good ass fucking song.
Oh, absolutely. It's actually one of those songs kind of like Learn to Fly. I mentioned last week, Foo Fighters. Like, I don't really like it as much, 'cause I think I've just heard it so many times that I've kind of pulled away. But when you're, I think the really great part about doing these lists, and I recommend anybody doing this exercise, like actually listen to the song, get a little notoriety of like how it impacted, like whether it's radio play or the generation or at the time. And like, this is one of those songs I'm like, okay, I give the song a hard time. It was number 1 on the US rock charts, charted in every single country. That's right, Bill, even like Ghana, every country, and won 2 VMAs. But Cobain said about the chorus, you know, the hey, wait, I've got a new complaint. He says that was an example of how he was perceived by the media. He said the song was inspired by documentaries about children with cancer. As you mentioned, the lyrics you said, he says like when he sees, basically the way it was interpreted was that like when he watched that, it like just broke his heart into a million pieces. And he wishes he could just take all of that pain from the kids and put it on himself.
Yeah, I think like Courtney Love or him might also be a cancer. So I think that was like the whatever it's called, astrological sign.
Oh, nice call.
And I think he mentions a Pisces in there too. So I bet you one of them's a Pisces and one of them's a cancer.
Yeah, that's how you dissect those lyrics, Bill. Put that crap on Wikipedia and it becomes a fact, just like the what I just read. Number 6, I will just say this. It's the only song on this list that's not on an album. I was thoroughly shocked you had it on your list. But
really? This is one of the better ones.
So it was literally for years. So when I was introduced to Nirvana, I said it was around 2001, 2002. Like, not introduced. Like, really fell into them. It was during the illegal download.
It was them if you didn't know it was them. Well,
great point. Just so you know, it was mislabeled all over the Kazars and the wherever you download your music. And I forget who they said it. It wasn't Pixies, because obviously Pixies got a lot of that.
Well, he said he was trying to recreate the Pixies with this song.
Well, this is like the perfect song. So it's non-album. Number 6 is Silver. So when Bill sent his list, I was thinking I was going to have to rank it super. I try never to look at Bill's list. I already had like a script for mine, but I'm like, I have to make sure this gets on here. So like, I would have probably screwed around.
I had it 6.
Yeah. And I had it like right around that same area. At one point, this was by far my favorite Nirvana song because it is a straight shot story. And I truly, I don't know how to say this. I thought there was deeper meaning to it. I thought it was like, there was something about like his parents were getting divorced or there was something more dark, but it's literally a straightforward, a boy who left for his grandparents for the day. He's not happy about it. What's happened? It reminds me of my son sometimes because he like doesn't want to eat dinner, just wants to play. Instead, and he's just fighting to be taken home because sometimes my mother-in-law who watches my son like, oh, he's calling for mommy. He just wants to go home. And then basically he falls asleep after eating ice cream, watching TV. When he wakes up, probably plopped in the car, drove home, woke up, and he's in his mother's arms.
I think his daughter is in the music video too. Or that could be another music video.
Oh, I don't know. This would have, it depends on when the music, because again, this song was written in like 88. Yeah. Like this was like, and released, like produced in 89 during the Bleach recording, but never put on there. He also, this is like, I think this is such a great line. He says, despite the straightforward lyrics, the song was given the intentionally confusing title with Cobain explaining, I had a feeling if I call it Silver, most people would call it Silver.
Yeah.
But I think the point is that like Silver has nothing to do with the song at all. It's not in the song. It's like, if you were to like put a title to this, I would have called it like Grandma.
It's the weirdest Nirvana song ever and one of the weirdest songs for a band ever, because one, the title has nothing to do with it. And like you said, it's just about being dropped off and not having a good time. And his daughter is in the music video. I got to look up what it was actually made.
So they must have made it, in like 91, 92. Another thing about this that just weird anecdote. So Thanksgiving, there's a few songs that are like played on Thanksgiving. Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie, which is 17 minutes long. I can't remember the other one. But this song for like alternative music was turned into like a Thanksgiving song.
Really?
Yeah, so like when you, I don't know what alternative radio live DJs are on alternative radio on Thanksgiving now, but like they were literally like, because it's just like listen to the lyrics, kind of like remind, like I don't know, they're like a holiday-esque. It's one of the weirdest things, but it became a thing.
It's proof that he like never really sold out, because this is a super really, it's a rocky pop song, but it's the guitar riff is not like it grungy at all.
No, it's almost like you could fit this song into like today's rock music.
Yeah, it could be a good Guardian song too.
Love. Oh, ooh, Bill. I can't wait. Isn't that coming out? Like, isn't it, was that released yet? Or is it, it's like, was
Thor Love and Thunder is coming out soon, which I think
but is going to happen there. But I saw a tease on Twitter about the Guardians soundtrack.
Oh, I kind of want to like wait for the movie. I don't know if I want to like,
it was a tease though. It was like a tease up a tease. It just showed like a tape player going in, because we have to be getting later, right? Aren't they can't just keep playing from that 70s. Late early 80s stuff.
They'll have to wiggle in another way to get it. But like the whole thing is his mom gave it to him. And by the way, that video for Silver was filmed in 93.
Wow. Good pull. All right. Coming in at number 5. Again, massively popular. Like we're hitting all the strides here. Come As You Are. It was the third track off of Nevermind, the second single released. And Bill holds Kurt Cobain's longest solo as a guitar player in any song.
Really?
Yeah, that part in that like brown, no, like at that like bridge, I think it's like 48 seconds. And that's the only time he's ever had anything longer than like 10 second little riffs here and there. Cause a lot of their songs are relatively short.
Yeah. And another band that does relatively short songs, disparaged once on this program, in Adam's song, they referenced this song. You know, I took my time, I hurried up. But this one's like a creepy ass song. Like it's kind of a good message a little bit. Like, you know, literally, I think it's pretty derivative of like, you know, come as you are, as a friend, as an old enemy. Like what, like just be who
yourself.
You are.
Be yourself.
Yeah. But like don't almost, I take it as like don't try to like bullshit a bullshitter type deal.
Yeah. I agree. I just always thought it was like, be you. Like, it's okay. Like, don't put on a mask to be friendly with these people. Don't be, just be yourself. Who cares? The song also reached top 10 in 8 countries.
Number
and
one.
The top 40 in over 11 other, like, smaller countries. A few of these songs really pick up. So, this song ranked number 82 in Blender's top 500 greatest songs since you were born. R.I.P. Blender. Love that magazine. 452nd in Rolling Stone's top 500 greatest songs of all time. 2019, it was placed number 17 in Rolling Stone's ranking of 102 Nirvana songs. Kind of blows my mind. In 2005, Bill, this is a great one. Aberdeen, Washington, home of my guy, Brian Danielson. Now he should just have a big sign for him there. But it is Cobain's hometown. The sign, the welcome sign said, "Welcome to Aberdeen. Come as you are."
That's pretty cool.
So if you drive into Aberdeen, Washington, that is the sign you see. So there you go. So yes, but again, coming down to
heavily like, influenced by Nirvana. That's crazy.
Yeah. And think about like, and again, this is the song and using that lyrical content, using what you just said, like to be like a city, that's like, it's almost like the Live Free or Die moniker in an odd way.
Yeah. I like this one a little bit better. Like Live Free or Die, and they don't even have weed up there yet.
I don't know. Did they not? They don't have that. I know they have legal, well, they have legalized gambling. So
sports betting. Yeah.
Sports betting. Sorry. That's weird that they don't have, so they don't have dispensaries and
no.
That's so bizarre. Massachusetts has dispensaries. We don't have anything. We don't even have happy hours.
And we're Puritan.
We are. We're not even a state. Coming in at number four, again, this was toyed with, Bill, for me, being my number one.
Really? Loved it's it. Poppy as hell, too.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely get to that. It is About a Girl. It was the third track on Bleach. I think the only record we song we actually have off of Bleach. It was the number one in the rock in the U.S., number 22 in the Hot 100. And reasons for that, like you said. This is a great little excerpt before we get dive into it. Butch Vig, who's known as one of the best producers in rock, you can look at his, you know, the things he has done with different musicians, but he produced their Nevermind album, cited that About a Girl was the first hint that there was more to grunge with Nirvana. Also, never knew this till literally doing the research, and it was backed up because I actually watched part of the documentary. The girl was this girl named Tracy Miranda, or I think I'm saying that name right. It was Cobain's then girlfriend who lived with him at the time, and apparently she asked, "Why don't you write a song about me?" So he wrote a song about a girl. The lyrics address the couple's fractured relationship caused by Cobain's refusal to get a job, do cleaning duties around the apartment, and he often threatened to leave and live in his car.
I mean, that's pretty relatable to me. So
we've all been there, right? And it's funny because this song definitely reminds me of like, I don't know, like mid-20s relationships a little bit. But I thought it was a little bit – I thought it was more of a lovier song in an odd way. But, yeah, reading the lyrical content, listening to that, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I see where we're going here.
Yeah, I also read something where it said he had written it after watching Meet the Beatles over and over again. And it's very, you know, Beatles – you can kind of feel it in the song.
Yeah. No, you said earlier, it's a popular song, has a lot of Beatles influence, which, by the way, we now that we're in their top four here, the Mount Rushmore, like, a lot of Nirvana has Beatles-esque, like, you're not going to listen to the Beatles and listen to Nirvana and be like, oh, I see the complete, like, I see the similarities, but, like, song structure,
yeah,
yes, that's where you see it, and it's, you know, they weren't a multi-piece band. There was three pieces to this band. It's a guitar, it's a bass, it's drums. It is as simplistic and as awesome as it gets.
Classic high school rock band with your friends.
It really was. And like, you know, at the talent show that they never won because they actually were 10 times more talented than the dance crew, but nonetheless. But yeah, About a Girl just is, I think you nailed it. Like, it's the poppiest song they probably ever produced. It is, again, because at the time, you have to remember, Kurt Cobain loved pop music. The REMs, obviously he was influenced by Pixies and bands at that time, but like, he loved pop music. And this was so apparent, just the way the song's constructed. And he was also a little concerned that a song like this would get him like less credit. Like, people wouldn't like, because you have to remember Bleach. If you listen to the Bleach album, it is this grungy and dreary sounding. And then this song comes on, you're like, where did this come from? And also very rarely heard, Bill, as the album version. You always hear the unplugged version.
That is true. And like, we didn't even really dig into the unplugged stuff in here, but you know, some of the covers that they do on that are amazing that I still listen to this day.
Oh, we'll talk a little bit about them in our honorable mentions, but let's get to number three. It was the second track off of Nevermind. Also, VMA reached number five rock chart. Also topped in, just in the top 100, Hot 100 charts at the time. It is In Bloom.
Yeah, a little bit of like You're a Poser type of thing, right? Like, he's the one who likes all our pretty songs, likes to shoot his guns, but you don't know what it means. And there's actually a video of like it's a crazy Trump rally, and think how you want about politics, but they're dancing around to Rage Against the Machine. And like, it's like that's this song encapsulated in a guy dancing at like a Trump thing to Rage Against the Machine, or really anything
political. Any political. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause he wasn't political. Yeah. But that one fit perfectly.
Yeah, Cobain describes as the jocks and shallow mainstream types. He says it was actually the anti-grunge movement song. He says this is the tune that is so catchy that millions of people actually do sing along to it. Like, it was almost like he was trying not to make it as grungy, but he was also basically poking at people that, like, so let's just say it's the early 90s. Grunge movement was kind of for the time you would call them grunge kids, but like the artsy kids in school that sit at that table. This was like Cobain was for them. Then all of a sudden they crossed over and were getting fame from, like, again, the football player. So this was like the song that kind of poking at them, being like, bro, like, you're just interested.
You're not actually listening. It's just popular and now you're consuming it.
Yeah. And like, I'm making fun of you throughout this entire song. What is his name? Butch Walker has a great, so they did a album for Nirvana songs, but they changed the key of the music. So if you listen to this, it's "I'm the kid," and he, so they did like a key change. So everything's happy. So it's like, "Don't know what it means. Don't know what it means." Like, check that out. Butch Walker's "In Bloom." It is, it's on YouTube. It's everywhere. It's just a poppy, like, it will make your day. When it's a sunny day, like we had here yesterday in Boston, like, it's a perfect song to like go drive into and stuff like that. It's just funny. The complete switch of, and they did a whole album of this. And I want to say like 2000 and maybe like 9, 10 ish. But let's get into our honorable mentions, Bill, before we release our top two. We both had a bunch of different ones. I'll just start by saying what you mentioned in the Unplugged. Obviously, it's a David Bowie song. I did not know that at the time. "The Man Who Sold the World."
Mm.
Just brilliantly put together. Also has a famous feedback sound right before the third like chorus. It's like there's just this way, like, "Man Who Sold the World." And it's like, wah! Like, they could hear the feedback and they keep it in there, which is amazing.
And then "Something in the Way," which is made very popular now by Batman. The Batman, which, highly overrated movie if you haven't seen it.
I never saw it. So I saw your take.
That it's good, but like, people are making it out like the best piece of cinema that's been made in the last 20 years.
Not to go on a complete diatribe and sidetrack on this. So here's my perspective, just from like Twitter and things that YouTube and like all the like social medias that I kind of circle and like people review and I listen or visually see tweets. I felt like when the movie first came out, it was known as like, this is the best Batman movie ever. This is amazing. You got to see it. Incredible. 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. There's the release, like heading to the release, all the reviews. Then as it's been released and it's sat out there, it's probably what now, but 5 weeks or so, I think, ago now. It's been time. I don't even know if it's still in theaters, but like, I feel like over the last month, it's turned into, it's too long. Stories are not really about Batman. It's a little bit too dark.
Fans of Batman are seeing it now. And my biggest problem is, you know, you don't need prior knowledge necessarily to watch it and enjoy it, but it does help your experience because he's not Bruce Wayne at all. They don't make you care about him in the construct of the film. Oh. They only, like, you only care about him because you know he's Batman. He doesn't have an origin story, and I get that, but you can still make him likable and relatable and all of these things that he's not. And that's apparently the whole point of the movie. And I missed that, which I didn't like that. Yeah, right. So that's your point of the movie. That doesn't mean it was a good idea to do it that way.
But they stuck by it. They think it's a good idea.
This is good. I stand by. To me, like, they just missed the mark with the making of the movie. It was a nicely made movie, but I wouldn't have approached it like that.
Well, maybe next time you make the movie. But with that being said, as you know, you saw it. I did not see it. But Robert Pattinson and who was this? Matt Reeves, who made this movie?
I think so.
Yeah, they said they were like, a lot of the sit down when they constructed this Bruce Wayne, it was all around 1989 to 1993 Kurt Cobain. They read the stories we're talking about, referencing his moodiness, his demeanor, his mindset.
His hair.
Yeah, his hair, his look. But like, they really said like, that is like, so I haven't seen it. I actually haven't even heard his voice in this movie. But they said like, everything about this character, this Bruce Wayne in this universe, is very much that like, grungy, depressed, sad, down on his luck, but like knows he's important, but doesn't like that he's important kind of character. And again, I haven't seen it, but like all the things I read about that. So there's how it all does tie in.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Using Something in the Way was a nice nod to that theory. So it gets an honorable mention. One of the last singles, actually the last single, this was rediscovered years later, released, I think in 2002. You Know You're Right. Which I saw the band Seether perform on stage once, and I was like,
Cool. Seether,
yeah, they played one of the River Raves, BCN.
What's their actual hit?
Oh man, there was a couple there. They had the "Don't You Know That You." I couldn't name you a song off. There was two words like "Come Along." No, they had like a Madden song.
Oh, I'm thinking of Veruca Salt that has the songs either.
Oh yeah, God, I love the way songs were produced in the early '90s. So like unpolished and like kind of poor. Polly was another one. Mm-hmm. Another one of those kind of media feeding type of songs. Penny Royalty, which I never knew that was the name of the song for like years. I didn't know what he was saying. It just sounded awesome.
Well, he had a little bit of the Eddie Vedder going on a lot of the times where you actually had to look at the lyrics. There's a lot of lyrics where I was like, well, that's not what I've been singing for like 10 years.
Seriously, 10 years. That's when like the internet age of like the mid 2000s, like once we were really like looking at all the time, and like you would rant, like Wikipedia became a thing. I remember looking at lyrics and stuff. I'm like, that's what the name of that is, or that's what they're saying. Drain You, another one that was close to making this list. So, Bill, you ready to dive into the top two?
Let's do it.
Let's hit it. Coming in at number two is the last track off In Utero. It was the third number one rock song by Nirvana. That's right. Only three. Or this was the third. Grammy nominated and was on Rolling Stone's list for songs that shaped rock and roll. It is All Apologies.
This is, I mean, rightfully so, number two. And it, like, this song has a ton of meaning to it. I think one of the lines is married, ... buried. And like all of the changing responsibilities since like becoming a parent. So it's just weird to like get a glimpse into his mindset, because all the songs were so personally written, and you know, like the way that his life ended. And I know there's like, you know, Keefspiracies on how it ended, but like to be able to dig into the brain right before that is kind of crazy.
Very sad. We'll go with some of the accolades on this song, because I wanted this to be our number one for a minute, just to be different. But at the end of the day, it's hard. But in 2004, Q ranked All Apologies first on their list of top 10 greatest Nirvana songs. Blender ranked it number 99 in their list of the top 500 greatest songs since you were born. Don't know what year that is. 2011, it was ranked number 462, just a few spots higher than Lithium, on the greatest songs of all time by Rolling Stone. NME's list of top 10 Nirvana songs, this was number one. Rolling Stone placed it at number 13 in their ranking of the 102 Nirvana songs. And The Guardian, not The Guardians, Guardian in 2019, kind of like the newer, like there's NME, there's a few others. Guardian ranked it second on their list of top 20 Nirvana songs. So falling in place with us. But again, deep lyrical meanings, kind of like you said, it's kind of like it feels like a responsibility shift song, and like how your life changes through, like you said, marriage, children, and almost like everything he does, he feels like he has to be apologetic for. So it's like, before I even do it, I'm sending this message of apology. And it's like, I'm pushing this out there. I'm sorry about everything that's about to happen, everything I'm about to do, because I'm not just sitting on my couch stoned anymore.
Yeah, and this came out after the album came out after he died, right?
This song was released after he died. Or was this the last song? I know somewhere I had noted that there was a song that was actually the last song that they released prior to his death. Oh, it was Rate Me. Sorry. Rate Me was the last single at the end of 93 that was released as a single. This song, I believe, was released there. After, or this is like a
November 1st, 1994, I think they said.
Okay, so there you go. So All Apologies, you know, again, and then to hear this song after a man's death is, it's hard because you can just see the sadness again.
It's like a goodbye message.
It is, and I think this also, we talked about Man Who Sold the World, but All Apologies, I think, is the definitive song from their Unplugged album. Like, that's the song when you hear Unplugged. Like, About a Girl, very famous, kind of that's the only one you know, but I think when it comes to the definition of, like, what is, like, impactful Unplugged songs, this is it.
Yeah, this is the most recognizable. I think his, like, cardigan from that or whatever sold for, like a shitload of money.
Speaking of which, good segue is we're going to get to our number one. If you fell off the rock and just plan, if you were an alien brought to Earth and someone said, give me all the important things in the world, eventually, I'm not saying in what order, the toaster's clearly going to be one of them. That might be the greatest invention of all time. That's now become the air fryer. You have an air fryer?
Oh yeah, I love it.
All right, good. I'm just making sure you're a good American. But eventually, once you get to music and you start to figure things out and you're trying to tell them, okay, this time this, and then there was the Beatles and the Doors or whoever you want to put in all these inspirational things, eventually you're going to land on this freaking song, the number one song literally of the 90s. The number one song, I'd probably say, we'd have to have a really strong debate, which could be another time, of like, this might still be the last important song ever made.
I don't know about that, but it is crazy to think about this. And this was the song that I tried to reference earlier. This was the one where he was trying to write the ultimate pop song. He said he was trying to like basically make a Pixie song. But it does fit for Silver too, because that is not your normal Nirvana song. And this is, I would say, I mean, it's the most synonymous song with them. Also, one of the greatest music videos ever.
It is Smells Like Teen Spirit. So yeah, I mean, opening track off of Nevermind, Bill. And we talked about this as a pod we might do in the future. Maybe it's not we can debate the last important song ever made. Probably not, because that's literally been almost 30 years or 30 plus years at this point. But I think it's hard to debate. It might be the best opening track off of an album of all time.
I say that Weezer's My Name is Jonas is the best debut song of any artist. Okay. But yeah, this might be the most rock your face off. Because this is a better song than that.
It's a revolutionary song. Yeah. So Teen Spirit, widely interpreted as a teen revolution anthem and an inspiration to reinforce by its music video, as you mentioned, which is like epic. And it's all, again, the cheerleaders seem like drones and all the like long haired, baggy clothes wearing. I just
remember the janitor as a child too, dancing around.
His mom. But it was like, it was for them. They were the ones rocking out. It was their moment. And Cobain stated that the song was about his friends, explaining we all still feel like we're teenagers because we don't want to follow the guidelines of what is expected of us as adults. So it's also, yeah, he said he did agree. It's kind of like a teen revolutionary theme. And the song literally in the 90s, any end of year countdown. I don't care if the movie, in 1997, I remember seeing a countdown on MTV and this was number one. I don't know what the count. I don't think it was for the year of 1997, but this thing was just like defaulted number one, everything.
Yeah, this is the ultimate song of the 90s. I think, like you said, if aliens landed, if they got to the 90s, Nirvana would be included, and this would be, all right, this was the best song of that decade.
Absolutely. And again, it's one of those songs that I could see like at years of past. I've had my ebbs and flows. Like, I never wanted to hear the song probably for like an 8-year period. Cause I was like, I'm so sick of it. When it first came out and it was winning all those awards, I hated it. I'm like resentful. It was like Michael Jordan, Chicago Bulls. I'm like,
it's like, this is how we do it. I got sick of it, but now it's come back around.
Very much like that. But this song just has it all. It is literally like, you could turn this on today, no matter how you feel, what's going on in your life. And you can like, it will impact you and make you, it will give you the feels and it will make you go, yeah, we need something like this. And I remember there was a song, Bill. You probably remember this band. Do you remember the X's?
No.
You might know the song, though. So they had a song called Ugly. And I said that was the Smells Like Teen Spirit for the late 2000s. And I thought that was going to become that. It just reminded me. It's kind of anthem-esque. And it's very much for that type of people. Like, you think you're great. Like, that song's just a kick-ass track. And I remember thinking, this is it. Like, for years, everybody's the next Beatles, right? It's like, oh, that's the next Beatles, or that's the next Beatles. Arctic Monkey's the next Beatles. This band's the next Beatles.
Franz Ferdinand.
They never got that title. But there was a lot of bands that got that. And then for Nirvana, I was like, what's going to be the next like anthem for the generation? And I thought, X's, Ugly, and then a song by Mondo Cosmo a few years back. And I thought that was going to be it. Neither one of these made it, and there really hasn't been another song truly generationally like this, in my opinion, but my opinion alone. Like, people might say there might be some hip-hop songs out there or some pop songs that really did some things, and like, I'll give
no rock song has ever done that. As like, they probably will never do it again. Like, it's rock doesn't top the charts, doesn't dominate top 40.
But see, this is why I think we're primed for it. I think in the next 10 years something's going to happen like this.
I don't know. I don't think it will. I think hip hop has dominated and pop has dominated for 25 years now?
But think about it. From the 60s to late 80s to this 90s, this happened, right? So that's like 25 years. Like, I just feel there's going to be some band that's going to be like just a three-piece simple set, and it's going to hit. And it's going to be once, and I hate to say it this way, that's why I'm giving it a 10-year, like Once the Foo Fighters are not making music, or like done, Green Day aren't just popping out albums in their like 60s. Like, I think that's when it will eventually occur, is when like you, there's no more even like touch of that old music. It's somebody new will come in. That's
just my guess. Music isn't as cyclical as like most things are, like with fashion, like trends in music a little bit, like, yeah, you know, they might cover this specific type of old genre, but you know, I don't see rock making a huge return anytime soon.
Give me a decade. I'll put $10 on it. So just to give you our top 11 Nirvana songs one more time, that can be debated. You can yell at us. You can tell us your thoughts. Dumb at 11. I'm on a plane at 10. Rate Me is 9. Lithium at 8. Heart-Shaped Box at 7. Silver at 6. Come As You Are at 5. About a Girl at 4. In Bloom at 3. Number 2 was All Apologies. And number 1, I almost said With a Bullet, and now I just did, which is a little offensive. It is Smells Like Teen Spirit. It is.
Yeah. That's not the exact choice of words you want, but it is true. It is, you know, 100% their most famous song. It might not be their best song, but it's my favorite for sure. And easily considered, yes, you know, up there with All Apologies and Come As You Are and all that stuff.
Absolutely. So that is the definitive top 11. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise, but let us know your thoughts. You can tweet at PopCulturePD, at BillyYee2411, at Jason D. Rossi. Let us know your thoughts on that. And if, what would you have? What is your, or what's your favorite Nirvana song? It doesn't have to be what is number one. Like, I don't think, like, to me, like I said, like Silver, About a Girl, probably my more favorite Nirvana songs. But in reality, the, when I'm trying to put together what I think is actually the best, Smells Like Teen Spirit. It's going to be hard to argue that. Bill, any final thoughts on that topic?
No, sir.
Get we'll talk about this. Oh, yeah, hold it out on my mind. Bill, you were on the Dork podcast talking about a little ditty on Apple TV called Severance, not Surveillance. Fell asleep during the first episode, not saying I don't want to watch it, not saying I'm not going to like it. Very intrigued by the first 25 minutes before I passed out, but give it like a push. Like, why should somebody watch this? Like, what is good about this show?
I mean, this is hyperbole to the most extreme you've ever heard, but I think it is currently the best television show on TV. It's coming back for a season 2, and it is one of the most, if you like discovering Easter eggs or you like any of the stuff that the Lost Experience gave you, I haven't dug into the Severance one, but they are like releasing stuff online that like you can read people's work files, you can dig a little deeper. Maybe I'll get into that now that I don't have it, but I'm going to definitely rewatch it once again. Right now I'm watching Better Call Saul to kind of fill the void in between Severance, but it's just brilliant. Like, everything is really well done. Everything is really well made. Every character is super enjoyable, and I want the show to get wildly popular because I think it has some of the most memeable content I've ever seen. Like, there is a guy in there, like, I don't know if you've met him yet. The black gentleman with the LaFro and the short white t-shirt. Like the New Jersey button down. He's amazing.
We see the guy who in the first, I think the first episode, that comes in and wants to talk to the guy who kind of gives him like the upgraded job. Is that him? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I know him. Here's what the thing that I'm happy you mentioned it, not spoiler in any way, is that like, I was wondering if this is one of those Easter egg shows that there's like a ton of stuff. Cause just that first, like I said, even 25 minutes, I could tell like they're dragging numbers into things. They're like pushing these manila envelope folders into things. And I'm like, I wonder if like this is going to mean more later. Like, that's the one thing, because you said it's 9 episodes, about an hour each, strong hour. It makes me a little nervous, but really, really, I'm interested, and that may help me want.
I think it's one of the best made shows from a season 1 standpoint I've ever seen.
Ooh, hot take. Also, Bill, I watched Bad Vegan on Netflix. I don't know if you watched that.
I had mixed reviews on it.
Here's why. It was 4 episodes, and here's what I would say. Definitely a one-sided documentary, trying to paint a good picture of someone who I think is one of the biggest bozos on the planet. I get loneliness. I get how we can all like fall into, like, if there was some girl with a big smile and a big butt, Bill, I know you'd probably do stupid things for them financially as well as other things. But I think there's a certain point where you're like, okay. Like, I don't think, here's how to explain this best. If you start dating a girl and she's like, I need $4,000.
No.
Thank you. But potentially, we'll just say you're a little later on the relationship. Let's go through the narrative of it. Right. Later on the relationship, but they promise you that your financial future will be 100% okay. They send you pictures of like thousands and thousands of dollars on a bed. And they're like, oh, like they say they're in the military. They have to go into zero talk 30, but you have to give them all your passwords to all your personal information, your bank accounts, everything. Like you're so tied in with this person. And then Bill, they promise you. So let's say you have a dog and they promise you that you and your dog will live forever if you follow all the things they say.
Is that what happened?
Oh yeah. It is. The reason I knew about it before, like the bad vegan thing, I didn't know what that meant. And I thought it was going to be about health and I'm like vegan. I'm like, I'm not into this, but I remember the headlines years ago of like healthy something arrested at a Domino's. I just remember that headline.
Well, it happened in this area, right?
In New York.
Okay.
Like, but still like that was like, you probably remember that too. Like there's something, cause it was very memeable and like jokey, but the whole story is bizarre as hell, but makes me, sometimes I watch those things and it like opens my eyes and other times it makes me just upset. And I'm like, I think you're a moron.
Well, yeah, it's the same thing with the world's worst roommate. Like this girl went out with a guy she already didn't trust drinking for the night to go search for a gold toilet. It's like, you're an idiot. I'm sorry.
Honestly, but those are the, but like a part of me sees it a little bit, but like with that one, I did just a little bit. I'm like, oh yeah, like you're friendly enough, but like, yeah, let's go into this dreary place and golden toilet. By the way, how she survived that, like the will.
Oh my God.
The power to live when you're buried alive, basically, just not deep. Crazy. But yeah, some of these Netflix documentaries, I'm really much now in this place where I want to watch shorter things, but I think from the hype that you have now given and people are talking about, Severance, and I've heard like this came out, I feel like it came out like half a year ago, or at least
I think it started 9 weeks ago. I think the finale was recently.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I knew it was like somewhere in the earlier portion of this year, late last year. So like, I remember I've had it on my queue because I was watching some other crap on Apple TV.
Q zone.
It is in my Q zone, but I think I'm definitely going to try to dive in as much as I can. Don't watch as much TV as I used to. Just a lot of wrestling, though. It's a lot of wrestling in my
head. It's like 9 hours of it a week. So
yeah, it is. And I have to catch up with some a little later on today after I take care of my freaking son. but again, all apologies. Anything else, Bill, on your mind?
That is it for me.
So aside from, we don't have to give them that answer, but aside from your podcast with Dork, they did, what were they doing? There was like something with like ratings of superheroes?
Oh, like cards. Like they have the Marvel cards and they either had to guess the stats on the back, like baseball cards, or pitch a movie.
Or pitch a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, like
or maybe both.
Cool. I'm into it. I'm gonna like, I thought they were talking about cards for some reason. I'm like, I love all the content that all these guys do, just not all for me. Like we are not for everybody. But that sounds kind of interesting. Changed my mind. I think I saw those guys where they were doing like a
Morbius?
No, that was last week. Yeah. I didn't update that, Bill. I screwed you.
I should do it myself.
They did something with like the future of MCU or something like
that.
And then Mac and Goo, they did like an old movie or something, right?
1989 Classic Aliens. And then I've heard it both ways. We're doing episode 8 of season 4. And then the streamers, Shime Time, Arvon D, Dr. Joe, and Keith also Twitches. Davey and Keith are on YouTube.
YouTubes. I love that. Bill, any final words for the fine folks?
Slap it on the biscuit.
You all have a great week. Frank says hi.